Chapter 2. When Ron woke up on Saturday morning, his first impulse led him toward the front door. He picked up the paper and took it to the bathroom. There he began to read through the classifieds. Among the announcements, most of which were beyond the range of transportation, he spotted an ad for a 58 Ford station wagon. That planted a grimace across his face. He could just hear the thing rattling down the street the way that all old station wagons did. He hated station wagons. He saw another ad for a 66 Malibu Chevy with a vinyl top and a stereo tape player. Definitely not transportation, but he smiled as the ad drew its picture. There was nothing more in the paper. Later that morning, Ron's first real prospect came through one of his stepfather's friends. An Oldsmobile that had, among other things, suffered a rear-end collision. "The car's been kept well," said George. "Jerry always knew how to take care of a car." Marjorie nodded. "It's a nice car, or at least it was, anyway." "It runs fine," George hollered back. "It's got a dent in the trunk. That's all." "Jerry had that car in the shop every other week." "Something was wrong with it every other week?" snapped Ron. Committed to defending his friend's product, George arrived at the end of his patience. The discussion would soon descend to the stage of raw mimicking and the slamming of objects. The stepfather galloped to the refrigerator, pace increasing in time with his agitation. When angry, he didn't walk. George was a rather large man with distaste for verbal communication. On occasions when he was forced to talk, he'd done it with clenched teeth and distorted facial features. Over the years, he read paperback westerns and hardcore porns, latter of which he learned to hide from Ron since marrying the kid's mother. The mother and son had always gotten along miserably, often standing as a unit against him. They made fun of his friends and the way he spoke, all the while blind to the real George, who had kicked the shit out of his share of young punks' asses, or the George who had kept his mouth shut when the Army sent him on duty in the wake of an A-bomb test. He did what he had to do. He had already told Jerry that his stepson would probably take the car. If they embarrassed him again, it would be the last time he ever lifted a finger for them. George lit a cigarette and walked away. "Do what you want," he said. There was something about the thought of a car that had been kicked in the ass that Ron found both fitting and impossible to live with, like taking an advertisement out for ridicule. At any rate, there would be a 2-week delay until the car was ready. At least that would buy him some time until something better came along. "I gotta have faith in something," Ron told his Aunt Dottie. "Sometimes I feel there really is something that I'm supposed to be doing with my life." He didn't realize that it was a rather common thought to have, so he took a secret delight in his destiny fantasies. Aunt Dottie lived upstairs, in her late 60s with leather tapestry veins and patterns. She was a gutsy woman who'd survived heart attacks and husbands. She lived a rags-to-riches life, which had seen her laced with diamonds, minks, yachts, and rum and coke. It also reduced her to frantically waving her hand to get the foreman of her donut assembly line to allow her to go to relieve herself. She'd endure all the cold ball treatments and the removal of 7 inches of her intestines while continuing to puff her Chesterfields. She and her nephew exchanged a look that ended in a shared smile. He had been her favorite ever since his mother had named him after the son Dottie hadn't been able to keep alive. You shouldn't drive junk, she told Ron. People always judge you based on what they think they see. If you show them junk, they'll treat you like garbage. I don't care what they think, said Ron. I was the same way, and it made my life a hell of a lot harder. It's stupid to be a target for what people don't like about the world. Suppose I don't let them get me. She squinted at him through her glasses. Driving a car like that, who's going to believe that you can't be gotten? Silver hair added to her transparent demeanor. Ron reached out and patted the top of her hand. After a moment, she drew her hand away. He stood, and as was his custom, took a tour of her rooms. Everything spelled elegance and fragility. The living room sofa cushions were fluffed as plump as ripe vegetables and held the promise of an angelic descent. The gloss of polish gave the room the feel of a photograph. When he was a boy, he dreamed of diving into her Chippendale couch where no one ever sprawled before. He felt like a moving smudge then. As always, her drapes were closed, and he knew that the streams of light were filled with dust. But at the time, it had all been magic. Ron touched the arm of the Queen Anne chair, dressed in silk thread paisley, and thought about the time he'd broken one of Aunt Dottie's vases and hid the pieces in his uncle's closet. She blamed her last husband, the one on whom she enjoyed blaming things, even though she'd known it was wrong. Walking back through the moon rooms, he smiled, remembering how his aunt had wrapped her head in a scarf and served the old man creamed chicken for both lunch and dinner. I'm going to try to make Jerry's car work. But if it doesn't, maybe you could help me get something else. Nodding her head, she smiled at Ron's con man tactics. She liked that he was always a few moves ahead, even if he didn't know it, and wore her donations to him like badges of honor. What did it feel like to have money, Aunt Dot? Didn't feel any different, except maybe made me think who I was and who I had a right to be. Was it different when you were my age, huh? She was used to the way he skipped around from topic to topic. Nobody ever left you alone back then. Of course, by the time I was your age, I was married and divorced. But would you believe it? There was always, even then, somebody running back to tell my father that I smoked or that they'd seen me out myself looking like I was up to no good. And my father was still boxing my ears. Imagine, a married woman, still getting bossed around like she was a kid. Did you hate him? I was afraid of him. But when he died, I went and cried my eyes out over him. Her parakeet, dubbed Sonny the Fifth, flew down and landed on her shoulder. She lifted him up close to her lips. What do you want, Sonny? Go see Ronald. She said the words with an upward motion of her hand. Instead, the bird flew back to its continually open cage. His unknown and coincidental namesake shared his coloring and always lived in the same unconfined circumstances. Sonny was her student, her whipping boy, when there wasn't a husband available, her pet and her confidant. All five Sonnies were taught the same tricks and language. They could say, pretty, pretty boy, you goddamn fool, son of a bitch, where's Margie, take another drink, you dirty bird. The last was one each bird learned without her patient repetition. It came about because of the paradoxical irony that evolved from her reactions to their bowel movements, something she tried over and over again to teach them to control. Aunt Dottie got up and walked into her bedroom. With an easy motion and overall suppleness that she seemed to maintain through the sheer force of her will, she stood only a fraction over 5 feet and had spent 85% of her life weighing in at less than 100 pounds. She did develop a little paunch in her 50s, but the illnesses, especially the cancer, slimmed her right back down. She came back into the room holding a $20 bill and waved it at Ron. "You take this in case you need to take a cab somewhere," she said. Embarrassed, he slumped back into the chair. He looked up just as Sonny the Fifth sprang into the air and landed on his head. Ron didn't like the thought of a bird sitting up there. He'd seen his uncle toddling through the rooms more than once with a load of bird shit nestled in his hair. The bird hopped onto one of his fingers, and he waved him back to the cage. "I don't think I need it," he told his aunt. "Take it anyway." She placed the bill in front of him. "Show someone a good time with it. Waste it. I don't care what you do with it." Ron looked at her face and saw that she was serious, as the two traded gazes of camaraderie.